Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Students for Fair Admission versus Harvard conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's conference over to Anjali Sacernetto with the Leadership Conference Education Fund. Please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anjali Sacernetto, and I'm the Managing Director of Field and Member Services here at the Leadership Conference Education Fund. The Leadership Conference Education Fund builds the public will for federal policies that promote and protect the civil and human rights of all persons in the United States. It was founded as the education and research arm of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, a coalition of more than 200 national organizations working to build an America that's as good as its ideals. Next Monday, the trial challenging Harvard College's affirmative action and equal opportunity admissions policy begins in a Massachusetts district court and is expected to run for about a month. The case, Student for Fair Admissions versus Harvard College, is the latest in a series of assaults on affirmative action and equal opportunity that have thus far failed to eliminate the policy. This lawsuit poses a fundamental threat to opportunity for millions of young people. It jeopardizes the right of every college and university to build diverse student bodies, and it threatens efforts to ensure that people of color who were previously excluded through custom and law have the opportunity to attend college. The case has been orchestrated by Edward Blum, the man behind the Fisher versus University of Texas anti-affirmative action case, and Shelby County v. Holder, which eviscerated the Voting Rights Act. Blum opposes civil rights laws and policies that seek to address the legacy of racial discrimination in America. This trial is likely to get a lot of news coverage, but as often happens on this issue of affirmative action, the coverage can sometimes be inaccurate, incomplete, or misleading. On this call, my civil rights colleagues will try to cut through the noise. We'll discuss the actual state of affirmative action and equal opportunity in America, the facts of the case, and how this case threatens our collective efforts to increase diversity in college admissions. Joining me on this call are Adam Fernandez, legislative staff attorney at the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, MALDEF; Rachel Kleinman, senior counsel for the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund; Janelle Wong, professor of Asian American Studies at the University of Maryland; and Nicole Ochi, supervising attorney for Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Los Angeles. First, we'll hear from Adam Fernandez, legislative staff attorney at the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, MALDEF. Adam?
Thank you, Anjali. Again, my name is Adam Fernandez, and I'm a civil rights attorney with MALDEF, the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, the nation's largest Latino civil rights law firm. For over 40 years, a segregationist fringe has worked to increase the longstanding underrepresentation of students of color in higher education by challenging affirmative action, the efforts to address this inequity. Edward Blum's efforts today cannot be separated from the segregationist roots of this movement. Similarly, the open white nationalism of the Trump administration cannot be separated from its support of Ed Blum's attack on affirmative action. The two movements of resegregation and white nationalism are two sides of the same coin. But what we often forget when talking about educational equity, but I'm sure is in the front of mind for white nationalists and segregationists in their efforts, is that America today is far more diverse than it was when affirmative action first started being used in higher education more than 40 years ago. Today, students of color are no longer the minority. Students of color are actually the majority of students in K-12 public schools nationwide. What we're talking about today is ensuring access to higher education to this new majority of students of color, to ensure that America's future leaders are as educated as they are diverse. America needs efforts like the race-conscious admissions policy of schools like Harvard to challenge the effects of other admissions criteria that are biased against students of color, to challenge the effects of unequal K-12 education opportunity, and to challenge continuing implicit and explicit bias. You'll hear more from the other speakers on this call who will go more into depth on the Harvard case. But I want to emphasize that Ed Blum is challenging Harvard because the Supreme Court has held it up as a model of race-conscious admissions policy. And Ed Blum won't tell you this, but it's also a model of successful admissions policy for all students of color, including Asian Americans, who make up 23% of the incoming class of students. And it's also successful for African Americans, who make up 15% of the incoming class of students, and Latinos, who make up 12% of the incoming class of students. Despite numerous attacks over 40 years, race-conscious admissions policies are settled constitutional law. Three times over the past 15 years, the Supreme Court has affirmed that race-conscious admissions policies aren't just constitutional. They're fostering important educational benefits that flow from a diverse student body, including, quote, ending stereotypes, promoting cross-racial understanding, preparing students for an increasingly diverse workforce and society, and cultivating leaders with legitimacy in the eyes of the citizenry. That's a direct quote from Fisher II, the last affirmative action case before the Supreme Court in 2016, a case not coincidentally also brought by Ed Blum. Ed Blum's cynical challenge to Harvard will fail again, like so many challenges before it. Again, affirmative action is settled law for over 40 years. It is precedent upon precedent upon precedent. MALDEF stands with its allies in the civil rights community in support of affirmative action and against resegregation in higher education.
Thank you, Adam. Next, we'll hear from Rachel Kleinman, Senior Counsel for the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Rachel?
Thank you, Angelie. Again, my name is Rachel Kleinman. I am senior counsel at the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Here at the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, we are representing 25 Harvard student and alumni groups in the case and in the trial that starts on Monday. These alumni groups and student groups are from diverse backgrounds and diverse racial and ethnic heritages. Representatives from these groups share their declarations with the court. During the summary judgment briefing phase of this case, they outlined their personal experiences with race at Harvard, including the role that race played in their personal admissions essays, their own issues with racial isolation and at times racial hostility on campus, and the importance of diversity on campus to them, both as individuals and for the groups that they represent. The 25 groups we represent are all committed to inclusive admissions policies. They know firsthand that the quality of education for Harvard students would be significantly diminished if the current policy was abolished, because they would no longer be able to find a community of people like themselves or to learn from people different than themselves. Many of the students in the groups that we represent, including Asian American students, have told us that they would not have been able to tell their stories in their admissions essays without talking about their race or ethnicity. These are integral parts of their identity, and they should not be artificially suppressed from an application process that looks at the whole applicant. No student is admitted to Harvard solely based on their race. Race is just one of many, many factors considered. And eliminating the consideration of race from the admissions process would not end racism or bias. SFFA made multiple attempts to censor and suppress the voices of the students we are representing and that others are representing in this case. They asked the court to strike their declarations from the record, and they opposed our motion to have our clients testify at trial. Thankfully, SFFA lost each of these challenges, and we will have four of our student and alumni representatives testifying at trial to the kinds of things that I described before, their own racial isolation, the importance of diversity to both themselves as individuals on campus and to the organizations that they represent. We're confident that the Massachusetts Federal Court will uphold what the U.S. Supreme Court has already affirmed, that universities can and should consider race as part of a holistic, multifaceted admissions policy. Diverse learning environments enrich the college experience and better prepare students for success in the multiracial workplace and society we live in. We cannot let SFFA threaten the important progress that Harvard and other colleges and universities have made in building a diverse and inclusive student body.
Terrific. Thank you, Rachel. With us now is Janelle Wong, Professor of Asian American Studies at the University of Maryland. Janelle?
Hi, again, my name is Janelle Wong, and I am Professor of Asian American Studies at the University of Maryland. I just wanted to build on the last speaker's comments. What is holistic review and what is it not? Holistic review is a process that takes test scores and other quantifiable data into account, as well as other non-quantifiable indicators of academic and personal achievement and potential. It also considers how environmental factors such as school quality or neighborhood factors help to make a student who they are today. These are not to make up for deficits, but are considered to raise up a full range of factors that might help indicate students' potential and academic promise. What holistic review is not, it is not a point system. It is not a bonus, and there's a lot of discussion about checking off boxes. If my child who's going to apply for college soon checks off a box, that does not translate into a negative or positive. And for underrepresented groups, it does not translate into simply being admitted or not based on that box. For that box to matter, the student has to put any identity indicated by that checkoff into context through an essay, through describing the meaning of that identity in their lives. And I'll end there. Thanks.
Thank you, Janelle. And finally, we're going to hear from Nicole Ochi, Supervising Attorney for Asian Americans Advancing Justice, Los Angeles. Nicole? Nicole, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah. Hi, Nicole, are you there?
Oh, I am. I'm sorry. I was on mute. So hi, everyone. My name is Nicole Ochi. I am the supervising attorney at Asian Americans Advancing Justice Los Angeles, and we also represent a group of diverse students who are prospective students, current students, and alums who will be testifying at trial at the trial that's starting next week. But I'm going to actually focus my comments on sort of Asian Americans and the role that Asian Americans have played in this debate. So there's really three points, I guess, that I want to make. Affirmative action does not limit Asian American enrollment. I think there's this prevailing myth that affirmative action is the same as quotas. But this is certainly not the case, as the previous speakers have described what the process is like. There's also no evidence in the Harvard case that there are quotas. And in fact, Asian American admit rates have increased by 27% since 2010. There's also this myth that affirmative action hurts Asian American students because they result in this penalty where they need to score higher on standardized test scores. But this is also inaccurate for several reasons. First, test scores do not play a large role in the admissions process at elite schools because there are so many applicants that have high test scores. It's not really the determining factor. And second, getting a high test score doesn't mean that someone deserves a spot more than someone with a lower test score, because test scores tell us very little, actually, about a person's aptitude and a lot about their class and race. Just as a concrete example, the difference between a 1400 and a 1300 on the SAT score is almost indistinguishable. Both students are just as likely to receive an A- or a C+ on their in their first year grades. And then third, this sort of test score gap that's often exploited to make it seem like Asian Americans are harmed exists regardless of whether there are affirmative action policies at a school or not. So certainly, the consideration of race is not the cause of any supposed penalty. And then the last thing I want to say on this point is just that, you know, Harvard's consideration of race as a positive factor really does have little to no effect on Asian Americans, because of the numbers. There's so few underrepresented minority students, Black and Latino students, that apply to these elite schools. They have a very little effect on API admit rates. And we saw this throughout the evidence that came out in the Harvard case, and many scholars and researchers have also done similar studies. And in fact, socioeconomic status, geography, and majors, among other factors, are more predictive of admit rates than race. The second thing I want to discuss really briefly is that Asian Americans can and do benefit from the consideration of race in the admissions process. Statistically, low-income Asian Americans fare better when race is considered, and underrepresented API groups also do better when race is considered because their potential contributions to diversity are considered assets. And then anecdotally, at least three of the Asian American students that I represent in this case, two of whom will be testifying at trial, are beneficiaries of affirmative action. And we know this because they looked at their admissions file and they saw how their race sort of played into the admissions officer's comments, and they talked a lot about their race in their essays, which were viewed very positively in the admissions process. And then the third thing I just want to mention is that eliminating affirmative action will not address any discrimination against Asian Americans. You know, it is absolutely true that Asian Americans are discriminated against and subject to stereotypes in many aspects of life, and like any other student of color, could be subject to implicit bias in a way that could affect them somehow in the admissions process, but this lawsuit will do nothing to address any of those things. And really, the best way to address discrimination is race consciousness, not race blindness. And so because of all of these things, I just want to point out that Asian Americans will not benefit from the elimination of affirmative action, and that Ed Blum is just trying to use Asian Americans as a cover for his true agenda of changing policies that will ultimately benefit white students who already have the most advantages in the admissions process and in life. And so that's why my organization is supporting many of the Asian American students that we represent to engage in this week of action to defend diversity throughout this whole week leading up to the trial and culminating in a rally for diversity and inclusion in Boston on Sunday. And I really encourage you all to take a look at that, to cover that, and to really promote the stories of the Asian American students who support affirmative action in this case.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. Operator, we are now ready to take some questions from reporters. Can you please provide the instructions for asking questions?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone, and we will pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. Again, if you would like to ask a question today, please press the star and one on your touchtone telephone, and we will pause another moment to allow questions to queue. And it appears that we have no questions at this time, so I will turn the call back to our speakers.
Terrific. Thank you. If the media has any questions that weren't raised on today's call, please feel free to contact my colleague Corelli at Hernandez, H-E-R-N-A-N-D-E-Z, at civilrights.org, and she will follow up with you offline.
Anjali, this is Janelle. Can I add one more thing?
Yes, please. Go ahead, Janelle.
I meant to just mention a new report that came out yesterday from AAPI Data. That's aapidata.org. And that report includes the latest data on Asian American public opinion on affirmative action. So it was released just yesterday. It's the only data available for 2018.
Thank you, Janelle.
It shows a majority of Asian Americans support affirmative action.
Thank you, Janelle, for flagging that important resource. It actually looks like we do have a question in the queue. Go ahead.
We will take this question from Colleen Walsh with the Harvard Gazette. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Colleen. This is a question for Nicole and for Rachel. I'm just curious if you could maybe weigh in on the decision of the judge to allow the students to testify at trial and the alumni to testify at trial, just the importance of that decision.
This is Rachel. I'll take that first. I think it was an extremely important decision. Without it, we wouldn't be hearing any student voices at trial. Neither the plaintiffs nor the defendants are planning on calling any. And as we all know, it's the students and the alums who, first of all, have the most direct experience with what this race-conscious admissions policy means and how it's lived on campus and how it's enriched their lives and why it's important. And they are also the ones who are going to be affected most by the decision. So I think it is really crucial that the judge recognize this and that is having them part of the trial and that their voices will actually be heard and part of the record.
I mean, I guess I would just echo what Rachel said, and I would also add that the students do provide sort of a crucial third-party viewpoint in this case, because what we have here is an interest group led by Ed Blum on one hand, who is not actually interested in Asian Americans or in ferreting out actual discrimination or anything like that. He's just interested in ending affirmative action. And then we have Harvard on the other side, whose policies we definitely support, but of course has an institutional interest in protecting itself. And the students, both ours and the ones represented by LDF, can provide this third viewpoint of how affirmative action is necessary to achieve diversity and continues to be necessary because the racial climate at Harvard is still not ideal.
Got it. Can I follow up with one quick question?
Yes.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, just to follow up there, I guess I wondered how you would both respond to the SFFA sort of pushback that the students and the organizations don't necessarily have any knowledge of the college admissions process.
This is Rachel. I think the first thing I would say to that is each one of these people has been through Harvard's admissions process. They have direct experience with it. I think, as I mentioned in my remarks, a number of them have spoken about how important it was for them personally to mention their race either in their essays or elsewhere in their applications and how integral that was to them as part of the process. So I think they can speak very clearly about the admissions process and have pretty intimate knowledge of how it works, at least on an individual basis.
And to that, I would just add that, to my knowledge, there won't be any individual admissions files presented by the parties in this case, but one of our students took pictures of his admissions file when he reviewed it, and he's one of the students that will be testifying at trial, and so he has been able to see how the admissions process works, at least on his file. Right, he could see the different comments, the different scores, what they highlighted on his essay, et cetera.
Great. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for the question. I think we have another question in the queue. Go ahead.
We will take our next question from Ben Wehrmund with Politico. Your line is now open.
Thanks. I was wondering, you've mentioned that you believe that Edward Blum is using Asian Americans kind of as cover in this case. I'm wondering if you see that the Trump administration is doing that as well in its brief in this case and in its investigations at Harvard and Yale.
Well, this is Nicole. I guess I could start. Yes, definitely. I definitely see that as a problem. I think that one of the things, particularly with the Department of Justice, that I find troubling is that they are the one sort of agency that is equipped to investigate claims of disparate impact, for example, mm-hmm. because a private litigant cannot prosecute those claims anymore under Title VI. And they are, instead of using that enforcement power, I guess, that they have to look at perhaps the more relevant question of whether Asian Americans are experiencing a disparate impact in the admissions process vis-a-vis white applicants, they are ignoring that aspect of it and instead going full steam ahead to attack affirmative action, which really has no effect on Asian American students. Well, I shouldn't say that. It has no negative effect on Asian American students. I believe it has a positive effect.
And Janelle, would you also like to expand?
Sure, thanks. So, you know, I think I do also agree with Nicole that the Trump administration and the Department of Justice have a track record of being unfriendly to race-conscious policies. Jeff Sessions has been explicit in his hostility towards such policies. And if the Trump administration and the DOJ were serious about investigating discrimination in our education system, they would be looking at the disparities in K through 12, in other, they would be looking at racial segregation in our nation and how it affects the outcomes of different groups of students that lead to the kind of test score disparities we see in this case. But they're not doing that. So it's really hard for me to believe that they have the interest of educational equity at heart when this is where they've decided to put all of their energy.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any other questions in the queue?
Once again, if you would like to ask a question today, please press the star and one, and we will take our next question from Michelle White with KIQI Radio. Your line is now open. Michelle White, your line is now open. You can ask your question at this time.
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't muted. But thank you so much, panel. Good morning for bringing this theme over and over. It's so important. And I would like to have your point of view, Attorney Fernandez from Maldives, on how the Latinos, it's very sad to see we are underrepresented, not only politically, but in our schools. So what would the message be to, like, come to this, to the universities and just join and fight for the right to study?
Affirmative action is a very important issue for the Latino community. While our enrollment in elite institutions could be higher, I think what's most important with this case before Harvard is that the efforts by Ed Blum are seeking not to increase equity for Asian Americans, African Americans, or Latinos. It's seeking to get rid of affirmative action, those same efforts that work to address the inequity. Getting rid of affirmative action would cause the enrollment of Latinos in higher, especially in elite higher educational institutions, to plummet. I saw one statistic that the effect for the Latino community would be that enrollment in Harvard would have if Ed Blum's attack were successful. But again, affirmative action is settled law for over 40 years, and this effort is likely to fail like so many others before.
So, Attorney Fernandez, before you leave, do you think it would get to the Supreme Court at some point, the decision to get rid of the affirmative action?
Well, it shouldn't because so many cases before it. have settled this precedent over and over again. Of course, at any case, the Supreme Court does have the option to take cases before it, but there's no new issue of law, at least at this point, that differentiates this from the Fisher II, the last case that came before the Supreme Court. It's just a cynical attempt to try to pit the Asian American community against the African American and Latino communities, and one that, as you've heard from the others on this call, isn't working. And their claim that Asian Americans are being disadvantaged by this just isn't backed up by the facts of Asian Americans making up 23% of the incoming class of students in Harvard.
So when will the outcome of these lawsuits will have news on when it's settled?
The case begins next Monday, and I'm sure we'll all be watching it.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions in the queue?
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we will pause a brief moment to allow any final questions to queue. It appears that we have no further questions at this time, so I will turn the call back to Anjali Thacker-Nittel for any additional remarks.
Great. Thank you, Catherine. I just want to take a moment to reiterate that equal opportunity and affirmative action policies at universities are supported by a broad cross-section of American society, and as the court has found time and time again, have benefits that extend to all students in our colleges and universities. Lastly, if there are any other questions that weren't raised on today's call, please contact my colleague, Kareli Hernandez, HERNANDEZ, at civilrights.org, and she will follow up with you offline. This concludes today's call. Thank you all for joining us today on this very important call. Have a great afternoon.